While this podcast contains little to no explicit material, it is sprinkled with some uncensored swears. Listener discretion is advised.
The days like skin, pray for evenings in, hold their hands in the street when you walk them off to school. A box too full to shut, cardboard paper cut, the bleeding edge of a picture of your parents when they were cool. So much to say, I forget to start. There goes the day, fading as it passes. Forget the gray, let it fall apart. It's okay, I like you in glasses.
Hey, everybody, welcome to 2024, I guess.
We took 2023 off.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we had obligations.
Many, many.
I have a baby.
Yes, congrats.
Yep, second daughter for the cast, Opal Ann, is here. I'm looking at her right now. I've also had four jobs in the last year. Help me.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah. It's been a busy, busy, really rough year.
Yeah.
So we're getting back together to try and record a quick cast and
getting the band up together.
But I don't see any point in belaboring things. Let's get to it.
Okay. I just want to know, I'm recording a new office. So if I sound weird, that's why.
I'm on my work microphone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it works. Okay, so who wants to start? We're doing our COVID watches.
Yes, because that is still very much a thing. It's still going on. I had it a few weeks ago before the holidays, and
ooh, didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that bad this time around. It just kind of felt more like a regular cold, and I got over it, and you know,
good.
Much faster than the last time. Still sucked, but
good. Actually, no, I do remember you telling us that. No, but yeah, I also had it at the beginning of November, and it sucked. It was pretty mild for us, but it still was like it caught up. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you work in a hospital, it's bound to happen, unfortunately.
The risk is boundless.
Oh, yes. Very much boundless.
So, yeah, it's still out there. So, we're doing our COVID watches, and this will cover a lot of 2023.
Except for the tradition goes, you go first, so game on.
All right. So, I finally saw a movie in the theater after a long absence since the first Sonic movie. I saw Barbie.
Hey.
We all did.
It was fine. It was honestly fine.
That's kind of where I'm at with it. It's fine. I actually thought it was better at the beginning than at the end.
Like, the production design was very great. Spot on. No notes. It's just the script is kind of clunky.
It's weird that it's from the writers. Yeah, it's my wife said it best. It's a different movie every 15 minutes.
Ah, yeah. Interesting. Okay. I quite enjoyed it. I saw it with family. I just had a lot of fun. But I get that it's co-written by Noah Baumbach, who I know you guys are not fans of, which I totally get, because I didn't like...
I like Greenberg more than I like this, honestly.
Yeah? Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, I saw his Netflix movie a while back and did not like it that much. So, yeah, he's an interesting figure, because I like a lot of his Copen scripts, but, yeah, I did like this one.
Because the thing that kind of... I think I just got kind of bored halfway through, because we've seen this before, literally 10 years ago, with the Lego movie. Like, a lot of the beats are similar, including having Will Ferrell as a corporate executive.
As a god figure. Yes.
And honestly, yes. There's no reason not to think he's not playing the same character, honestly.
Yeah, and they're both Warner Brothers movies. So at that point, I'm just like...
And then before that, The Truman Show.
Well, okay. Yeah. The thing is, the Truman Show is actually good.
Mm. Yeah, the Truman Show is brilliant. One of the best movies of the 90s.
Having a decade of this kind of brand of humor where it's honestly the same fucking plot. With both movies, I'm just like, why? I don't know what awards it's going to win, but I just felt like fine to like a little peeved with it as soon as I got out of the theater. And it's honestly not as catchy as everyone says it is.
No, it's really not. I think Ryan Gosling is getting a little bit more praise than I would have given him for it, honestly. I liked him better than The Nice Guys.
He was great in The Nice Guys. I get it. Only because he played a ditzy blonde, you know.
Yeah. Margot Robbie is great in it, though. I will say that. She is, as usual, fantastic.
Yeah. I think it's mostly just because of the press tour that he was getting all that attention for it, just because he acted the part.
Yeah.
So that's probably like 90% of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, Margot Robbie was also great.
Moving along. Saw another film in the theater, although this one is more of a finally watching it in the theater as opposed to streaming. And that would be Stop Making Sense.
Classic. I still have yet to see that.
I mean, everyone should see it at least once. It's great.
And of course, this is the Talking Heads concert film.
Correct. But I kind of wish the theater that I saw it in was a little more packed and a little more lively with interaction between the screen and the songs and everyone else, because we all just kind of sat there and then applauded after each song and then cheered when the giant suit came out. Yeah, it wasn't anything like the Eras tour.
I'll be getting on that.
Yeah. Another film that I watched was Megan.
Ah, yes. I forgot about Megan.
I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty good.
It was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And really, at the end of the day, that's all I can say about it is it's fine.
It does the job. It does the job. It's nothing I've thought about in the year since.
Yeah. But
it's fine.
Yeah.
Funny.
My only criticism, real quick, is just I don't get how the physics of Megan works, like her physiology, because she's light enough to pick up, but she's strong enough to crush your windpipe.
A wizard did it.
Next. A wizard did it. Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, yeah, no, it was great on a script level. It did the job. It was good.
Keely Cooper's a good writer, so yeah.
Yeah. So that's, you know, my only criticism is very nitpicky, so that's pretty good.
I also saw a Skinamarink, finally. Austin, this is not a film for you to watch.
No, there are a million reasons it's not.
Yeah, but I personally enjoyed it. It's one that I've kept thinking about long after I had watched it. And yeah, it's genuinely terrifying at points, as well as having the use of the public domain cartoons to illustrate certain aspects of the film, and like going back and rewatching some of the cartoons I had seen as a kid, surprisingly. I'm just like, oh, okay, so we're doing this, and you know, just trying to figure it out in my head. And yeah, I actually like this one. It's definitely not for everyone, and those expecting something more along the lines of Paranormal Activity would be disappointed, as this is more in line of experimental filmmaking, in a sense. I also watched Josie and the Pussycats, the live-action movie.
How was that? Was this the first watching?
Yes, it was. It was the very first watch, and it definitely plays like a Y2K version of Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
Yeah, it's a trip.
It is.
Oh wow.
I mean, not so much exactly like Beyond the Valley, because there's nothing that can compete with that.
It's PG-13.
Exactly. But some of the same beats are there, as well as the overall acknowledge of the artifice of pop culture, to where you have product placement in nearly every single scene.
Of course.
But done so in a way that it's actually hilarious.
So is it like a real product placement that they kind of do like a yes. Nice little wink wink? Oh, that's nice. Yeah. That's my favorite kind.
Yeah. See, there's also... Okay, I'll admit, I finally got around to watching Mean Girls.
Ah.
Yeah, I don't know why it took me so long. This is something I would have enjoyed.
So say we all. I saw it like 12, 14 years after it came out.
Am I the only one then that saw it opening weekend? Yeah, I guess so. I saw it opening weekend.
Yeah.
I've been telling people from the word go what it is.
Oh yeah. And now they're making a movie of the Broadway musical, which, if you didn't know, that's what it is. And that's why they're doing it.
Still not watching it.
They don't need to. Yeah.
No, they didn't.
I'll tell you what I wish they would make is the William Shakespeare's adaptation of Mean Girls. Ian Desher did a Shakespearean language adaptation of the movie that is phenomenal.
Oh, that's funny.
Every line, every word. William Shakespeare, Star Wars, yeah.
Yeah, or two Gentlemen of Lebowski.
Yeah, I really go with the one. Honestly, I prefer the Desher ones, because Desher, he's done the Avengers movies, all four of them.
Nice.
He's done. And the thing is, he doesn't just do scenes from these. He's done Clueless. He does the entire screenplays.
Oh, wow.
Every line, every shot, he doesn't miss a single beat. These are full adaptations. He's kind of quit, but he was great while he did them, so.
Nice.
Yeah. Mean Girls 1 is fantastic.
Had a extreme disappointment in watching High Rise, the live-action adaptation of the J.G. Ballard novel of the same name. The one with Tom Hiddleston.
Yeah, I heard that wasn't very good.
It's... Like, I read the novel over the summer while at work, because I had long periods of downtime, but just, you know, still enough to actually do the job and whatnot. And the novel is way darker, and not dark and edgy like internet dark and edgy, but actually like going places that the film just refused to do. Like, this high-rise apartment complex in the novel is supposed to be entirely caked in filth and shit and everything. And the movie just has, like, three trash bags in a room, and they call it dirty.
Yeah. So it's Hollywood dirty.
It's neutered. Like, the whole film is very neutered. And it doesn't... Like, it takes about an hour in the 2-hour runtime to get to the novel itself, which I find a little odd, but man, that was a disappointment. I rewatched Johnny Mnemonic, but this one was the black and white edit.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
It's a lot better. Like,
just... I believe it.
Yeah, just making it black and white gives it a stronger edge to the overall story and matches William Gibson's work a lot better than...
Yeah, because Gibson's very noir.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and the black and white version feels more in line with what Aronofsky would do later with Pi a few years later. So if there's a version that you want to watch, it's the black and white one, which I think you can buy on Amazon in physical form. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting what that simple change will do, because they did that with
Mad Max.
Yeah, I have the black and chrome edition.
And Logan.
Logan also? Oh, yeah, that's true. Interesting what it will do.
And, Nightmare Alley, the Del Toro version.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that also just speaks to the cinematography that still works in black and white.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also saw Hot Potato, the Wiggles documentary that's on Prime. Obviously, out of the three of us, I'm going to be a little more biased because I'm closer to their target demographic when they were at the height of their popularity.
Gotcha.
But it's actually a great watch, even if you never grew up with the Wiggles, because they actually, you know, they were in childhood education when they first started and, you know, actually studied and wrote rationales for the music that they did.
Wow.
So it adds an, not like intellectual aspect, like, you know, like you're in the bathrobe, smoking a pipe, etc. But just
depth,
you know, depth. And it shows that, you know, they know what they were doing.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
I did go through our friend Ron Ormond's filmography over the summer. You know, if what meant tire you.
Yeah.
Yes, because
there's not a rip track of that.
Do fucking tell.
Yes, I went through his entire filmography, basically, as it was released in a box set courtesy of Nicholas Winding Refn with Indicator in a limited number set. And a lot of his wild, like, not just the you know, the one that we covered, there's also the exotic ones, which features like a monster movie, like monster musical for some reason,
because why not.
Mm-hmm. You also have Please Don't Touch Me, which was a odd look at using hypnotism to discover a patient's past and why she's just rather cold in bed. But
oh,
it's,
oh boy.
Yeah.
Problematic as all fuck. I mean, we expected nothing less, but
yeah, but at the same time though, it's, I definitely have a better understanding of the man now.
Yeah, I believe that.
And like, if Footman Tire You got a dazzling remaster, like, it has never looked better than what it does.
Wow.
But at the same time though, the degraded VHS print that we all saw years ago is still the version I like to go for, just because of how... because
it's truer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It feels way more grindhouse.
Aesthetics, man.
Oh, yeah.
Very aesthetics. Much aesthetics. It's like, yeah. It's like when I saw Rango and it was on a beat-up print.
Yeah.
And it felt so much better because the print was scratchy and beat up. Even though that's a gorgeous movie, that is a visually stunning film. But having it be beat up and all that... it made the movie so much better. It made it alive.
Mm-hmm.
I love Rango.
Hell yeah.
I will also say that I finally crossed off a film that I had you two watch back in the day. Cool Cat.
Cool Cat.
The director's cut.
There's a director. Oh, God. I still think about Cool Cat.
There is indeed a director's cut in which there is a sequence that had no intention of being there where Cool Cat and Daddy Derek decide to do a home demolition project in the middle of nowhere.
I see. I may need... Where can we find this gym?
Tubi.
Tubi, perfect.
Yes, you can watch the director's cut on Tubi.
Are there more people coming into shot in the background, see what's going on, and then backing away?
There are a few more scenes included in this edition than the one that you watched all the way.
Right.
But I also put the housemates through it, as well as the youngest sibling, just like, hey, let's make you suffer today.
Put this in your pipe and smoke it.
Basically.
Awesome.
Yeah. What was not awesome was watching essentially what I deem to be the worst film of 2023. And that would be Sound of Freedom.
Sound of Freedom. The sex traffickers, they're in there.
Yes, okay. The child trafficking movie.
Is that what that is? I'm not fully familiar with it. I just know that it's very, very conservative.
It is indeed.
It was on when I went to see Elemental.
Oh, boy.
Well, I get to talk about one of those movies.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Sound of Freedom was around the same time as Barbenheimer. And when you work in a rather conservative city, people tend to discuss their beliefs a little bit more. And they said that Sound of Freedom was better than Barbie. And I'm just thinking, well, okay, one, you're full of shit. But two, you don't exactly know why this is bad. Because, okay, all of the controversy aside, all of the multiple controversies aside, this is just not a well-edited movie. It's incredibly slow. Like, not even an hour in, and it feels like you've been at this for about 2 hours.
Yikes. Yeah, no.
And you have the whole thing, which is allegedly based on a true, you know, experience taking place in South America. And you have none other than literal white savior himself, Jim Caviezel, swinging in to save the day.
Of course, Jesus is here. Yes.
Yes.
White Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
What's the whole premise of this thing? Is it like literally about this guy saving this area from child trafficking?
Basically.
Oh boy.
Like, the film does include footage of the raids. Dramatized sequences wherein the children are prepared for what's to come. The ethics of that are a little suspicious. Because these are the same exact people that lost their fucking shit over Cuties and never bothered to watch it when it was a coming-of-age drama about a girl trying to reconcile her feelings for two different cultures while going through puberty. Because I saw the fucking film, so I know what the hell I'm talking about. But yeah, these are, yeah, the same people that said Cuties was the work of Satan would go on to praise Sound of Freedom, a film which ends with text saying that, you know, this is an American issue as well. At which point it's like, well, why didn't you have a...
Why didn't you cover that?
Yeah, it's like, why did we spend so much time in South America when you could have just made a generic plot that took place in America and saved us all that time, and, you know, just not be racist about it?
You've got to be racist
and exploitative.
Oh yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, these people that I work with say that it's like, oh, it's such an important film, you know. I ran over the weekend and watched it with my family. And, what the fuck are you talking about? Because nothing says family movie night like child trafficking. God.
Yeah. Happy holidays.
Basically. The last one that I'll end up discussing is the Roger Corman, Edgar Allan Poe series.
They're wonderful in their own way.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I find, like, I had seen a couple off and on, but never, you know, starting from the beginning and working through it, including the Mask of the Red Death, which is as gorgeous as everyone says it is. But I just love how Vincent Price is so flexible with each role that he's in for the series. And it really established him as like a prime horror icon, horror actor.
And credit due, Price was always very pleased with the work. He loved doing it. He never condescended to it. He was thrilled with it. I mean, admittedly, it helped that a number of his closest friends were people who worked in it too.
Yeah.
He was certainly in with Cushing and Lee. He knew them well. And, you know, we were really lucky when we had those men working in that field, because none of those men ever acted like they were better than it. And, I mean, Christopher Lee ended his career on stuff like Lord of the Rings, though.
So. Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Which Lee loved doing, because he was an obsessive fan of the books, actually.
What a dream come true.
That's wild. I got us wildly off topic. I always do.
That's all good.
Well, actually, there's one more film, and you probably have it on your list as well, Austin, so we might as well discuss it together.
Okay.
The Little Mermaid.
You and I are probably going to be coming at this from different angles, because I had a very weird reaction to it, and I didn't expect it.
I have not seen it yet. I need to.
All right. Okay. I kind of just didn't care for the film at the end of the day. Like, bullshit controversy aside, because it is bullshit.
It's complete bullshit. But yes, go on.
Yeah, bullshit controversy aside, I just rather would have watched the original Disney version.
Yeah, that's what a lot of these really come down to. Like, I felt the same about Aladdin. It got better as it went on, and they gave Jasmine a song because feminism, which, great, but I don't think they needed to make a whole new version for that.
But at the same time, though, this did not need to take 2 hours and 15 minutes to tell the story.
Oh, so it's Mary Poppins' length. Okay.
Yeah, Mary Poppins' length.
Long movie.
it just felt like every single person who was a human character, they all felt trapped. Like Javier Bardem, who plays King Triton, I don't know what he wanted to do. I don't know what he's wanting to do now, because ever since No Country for Old Men, he's just kind of been all over the place. And then
he was all over the place before that, let's be fair. He was an all over the place actor. He just accidentally landed in the right place with that one.
Okay, I'll give you that. But I'm getting tired of Lin-Manuel.
He has something to do with the film.
Yes,
he songs.
Yeah, he wrote the new songs for The Little Mermaid.
Makes sense.
And they are
not great.
I mean, Scuttlebutt exists.
Yeah, let's not talk about that. That's the one area where even I agree.
Okay.
It's a song that stops the film dead in its tracks and never picks back up.
So kind of like when they released the special edition of the Beauty and the Beast, the animated version, and added a new song and added nothing to the film.
Kinda.
I should say they revived a cut song, which we now know why it was cut.
Right. But like that's different. This is like cut from a very brand new cloth and added into this story.
It's not 34 years ago. It's not 35 years ago is what it comes down to. It's weird.
It's shoehorned in.
Yeah, it's very much shoehorned in, and it wouldn't be something that would have been included in the original, which, yeah, I get that it has a sequence where the chef just sings in French and, you know, tries to chop up Sebastian, which is absent from this version. But like Scuttlebutt is not a song that Howard Ashman and Alan Menken would have made.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So it's not just shoehorning, it's shoehorning in something that fits in, like, I can't think of a good analogy, but yeah.
It doesn't quite fit.
Yeah.
So I guess it's going to have to fall to me to be the guy who has to play devil's advocate here, because I enjoyed the absolute hell out of it. I have to be honest, it just worked for me. I don't really know that I can put it any better than that. It just worked for me. I felt like the time was actually very effective for me. I will say that Melissa McCarthy as Ursula was fantastic.
Oh, yeah, I can see that working.
She doesn't do Melissa McCarthy. He does Ursula. I will give her that. I liked Bardem more than you did. And what it really came down to was I liked Ariel and Eric. I was invested in the lead actors. It worked for me. And I can see all the flaws with it. I won't forgive Scuttlebutt, but it worked for me. It just worked for me. And I'm someone who, keep in mind, I'm old enough that I saw the original in theaters. So, you know, this is actually the first time that I've ever had a movie where I saw the original in theaters and then I saw the remake in theaters. Because I didn't see Aladdin, I didn't see Lion King, I didn't see any of those. But I did see this one, and I don't know, I quite liked it. It was the first time that I felt like I felt Rob Marshall's touch from Chicago, I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, but that's just me. I've said my piece. Albert, you want to come in and do your movies?
Sure. I have a short list. It's probably much longer, but you know, I'll just kind of boom, boom, boom. So I want to get like some of the TV stuff out of the way. I only have like four on there, and they'll be very quick. Loki season 2. Yeah, I thought it was great. Everybody like it was a great coda to the story. So I can say about Kiki Kwan, it was great. I really loved seeing him. I love seeing him do things. But I don't have a lot to say other than that, and RIP Jonathan Majors' career.
Do it to yourself, you do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But anyway, moving on. Fargo season 5 is excellent. It's still ongoing. John Hamm is great. It's nice to see him get back to deadly serious. I love seeing him as a goofball, as he's done since Mad Men, like for a lot of things. But this reminder, he can be scary. And Steve from Stranger Things plays his son. It's great. Main character in this one is great. Fargo is just one of those TV shows that keeps coming back when you least expect it. And this is among one of the best seasons thus far. A combo. Lower Decks and Strange New Worlds. Strange New Worlds is a new one for me. It's great. They did, no pun intended, genuinely here, but they're doing bold new. They're boldly going places. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, they're experimenting like hell, and I love it. I mean, a lot of the stuff they're experimenting with is not new to the genre. Like having a musical episode, it's not new, but I love that they did it. I always love when shows do that. And of course, they had a crossover with Lower Decks, which is risky as hell, but they pulled it off. I loved it. It helps that the two main characters look like their characters on the show.
Yeah, they really got lucky there.
They really did. And I love seeing, I can't think of his name right now, but the actor who plays Boimler, he's on The Boys. He's
Jack Quaid.
Jack Quaid, thank you. He's one of those people like Bill Hader that just kind of pops up in very unexpected places and kills every time.
He's a good Nepo baby. He's a good Nepo baby.
Oh, he's related to like Dennis Quaid and Randy Quaid.
He's directly related to Dennis Quaid. He's his son.
He's his son. Oh, of course he is.
Yeah, Meg Ryan is his mom.
How did I not connect this? That's funny.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah,
he looks like his dad too, so.
Yeah, I can see it now that you mention it. But I like him a lot.
And his mom too. Yeah, he's good. He's really good.
Yeah. But those seasons for this year just killed, and I love it. So movies, I will kind of hit on like a very tangential point that you did, Zephyr, on a movie that I watched as a documentary about early Nickelodeon that is great because it's nostalgic to me, and it's called The Orange Years. I think it's on Hulu. Like, it was just nice seeing, like, a lot of the behind-the-scenes, like, it's specifically focusing on, like, 1989, or no, 1992 through, like, 97, which was, it was about the time I came in and, you know, left. It was Clarissa Explains It All, the early Nicktoons years, you know, Rugrats and all that. It's a great watch. They briefly do talk about Ren and Stimpy, but they skip right the hell over John Kricfalusi's involvement.
Good.
I mean, which I don't blame them. It's a very feel-good documentary that they did not want to get into that. But they focused on, like, the artists and producers and, you know, just all the people around it that made it what it is instead of, you know, him. But yeah, they got a lot of the people involved. They even got Clarissa herself to talk about it, which was interesting.
Did she actually explain it all?
She explained some, yeah. She explained the casting process and all that. It was great. But no, not everything. But yeah, they had it's a great watch. I highly recommend. So let's see, Barbie, yeah, we talked about that. I saw Nimona on Netflix.
How was it? Like, I knew I should have gotten around to it and haven't yet.
Oh, yeah. It's, I liked it quite a bit. It's very enjoyable. So basically, the story goes that it was one that was pitched to Disney when they were trying to shop it around. And the dude who came up with it, I think it's a dude, has been trying to make this for like a good 7 years, maybe 10, and pitched it to Disney. Disney passed. And eventually got around to Netflix. I'm glad Disney didn't make it. Disney would sanitize the shit out of it. Because there are a lot of LGBT themes in there. And it's not what the movie's about, but they're there. Which is great. But yeah, it's just a nice, rich little world to play around in. And it's hilarious. So yeah, I highly recommend it. I can't really say much beyond that other than, you know, I say go watch it. So, but let's see. One that's like hyper specific, the Venture Brothers movie came out this year, direct to video. I'm a huge fan of it. I got it, like, I pre-ordered it basically on Blu-ray. And Tab and I are both huge fans. It's a nice little wrap up. Would have liked an 8th season, but, you know, we got this instead. And it was a nice little wrap. I hope they get to do, like, more in this world, maybe not with this story, but maybe, like, a prequel or something. That'd be nice. So, anyway, saw Across the Spider-Verse. It was okay.
It's good, but I found that it didn't last very long in my memory.
Yeah, like, it kind of goes with my pet peeve a little bit of movies that, like, this is a part one. Really, it's a part two, but it's a part one of two. Yeah, it was meant to kind of...
It's not complete.
It's not complete at all, which I was I like when, you know, like Back to the Future, like when they did this, they made, you know, two is its own complete little thing. Three is its own complete little thing within the larger story. This is not it's not complete. I like the characters that it introduced. I like the I like that it continues the story. I'll be hyped for the third one because it'll complete it. But yeah, that's my criticism.
It's also a bit too. It's also a bit too much, frankly.
Too much.
Like, and I have the same comparison criticism of the first movie. It's overwhelming.
It is. Like, it's a lot. And, you know, the fact that they really tortured their animators is also a thing that kind of taints a watch for me. I mean, you know, it's famously documented. They overworked their animators. They made them work overtime, like, without compensation. Don't quote me on that, but there's a lot of, like, animator abuse going on. And, which, you know, long story short, they're starting to unionize. It's just great. The Warner Brothers animators unionized, and Warner Brothers has formally now recognized them. So that's a step in the right direction, I hope, trends. But I also want to use that as a segue into the next one, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem.
Yeah!
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that was gonna be on mine, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, and the segue in that is Seth Rogen as producer, specifically, like, you know, along with the director, specifically wanted to not do that to their animators. And you know what? It shows.
It really does show. There's a lot of love in this movie.
Yeah, everybody's having fun.
It's so well made. And it's such a love letter to the Ninja Turtles. If you grew up on them, I can't imagine this not hitting the spot so hard. Yeah. Even as it takes some bold steps with them, it's the first time I feel like the series has felt dangerous since the 1990 movie, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel safe and sanded down. It actually feels like there was some edge to it. It's grimy. It's dirty. It's gross.
Yeah.
There's a running subplot about vomit.
Yes. With April.
It's funny. It's funny. It's hilarious. But it's grimy, and I like that this isn't a safe movie.
Mm-hmm.
It also has both some really great use of celebrity voice casting and some why were you there?
Right.
Like, I can't tell you what John Cena was doing there.
Why not?
But on the other hand,
he was in Barbie too.
Yeah. On the other hand, Paul Rudd is fantastic in it.
Oh yeah, always. Oh yeah, Jackie Chan as Splinter. My.
Oh my God, he's incredible.
Beautiful. Beautiful, perfect, no notes.
Yeah. He reminds you that he's a really good actor.
Uh-huh. Actually, I saw a thing recently that said, you know, it's an article that says, Jackie Chan doesn't understand why he's still famous. Like, I know why you're still famous, guy.
You're good. You're good.
You're great. Yeah. You're eternal. So, yeah, I love that they cast teenage actors for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
And they talked like teenagers. How many movies have you seen with teenagers where they're talking like 30-year-olds?
Uh-huh. Yeah, no. This is how the youth talks. Take note. I'm sure they had a lot of input on the dialogue.
I think they did, yeah.
Yeah, good. So, yeah, it was a delight. I loved it. I saw Blue Beetle.
How was that?
I actually quite dug it. It runs at 2 hours. That's about right. I liked George Lopez in it.
Lopez is one of those guys that I actually really quite like him as an actor, so
yeah,
I believe it.
He's fun. Like, there's a bit where you really have to stretch your disbelief, like, you know, suspension disbelief a bit, but it's not a huge stretch. It's a fantasy superhero movie. It's fine. Just because he's, like, no spoilers, he plays like an inventor of sorts, and he's basically responsible for a lot of the tech, you know, besides the main one that Blue Beetle uses in the movie. But yeah, it's unapologetically Latino, which is amazing. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And notably, when you first see, like, the Blue Beetle ship or whatever, it looks just like Night Owls in Watchmen.
Which is how it should be, as anyone who knows the origins of the characters knows.
Yes. Blue Beetle was originally supposed to be in Watchmen, for those who don't know. And then DC told him to retool all the characters because a lot of them get killed. But anyway, yes. So I thought that was a nice little nod. It's not exact, like, the whole thing. It's like, okay, yeah, this is distinct enough, but you can see the seeds. Anyway, yeah, I mean, it starts off a little slow, but it doesn't take long to pick up. Like, it's, I enjoyed it quite a bit. We had fun with that. So, yeah. Let's see. Saw Mario Brothers.
It's
okay.
I think it's fine. It's fine. It's one of those things. It's pure fan service. It's not anything you're going to think too long about.
Yeah. I didn't even really care about Chris Pratt's voice too much. Like, you know, it's fine. Like, a lot of people kind of shit on it, on his voice work a bit. I think he could have done more, but, like, to dress it up a bit, but he's fine. Yeah, they gave a plot to a lot of games that don't have plot, like, with some exceptions. So, you know, there's bound to be, yeah, again, fan service, which I'm a fan. I liked it. Yeah.
Let's say this. It's way the hell better than the 1993 movie. My God, is it better than 93?
Yeah, which has its fans. Like, I haven't seen it. I probably need to at some point. Just,
I couldn't get through it.
You couldn't get through it? Oh, that's too bad. Well, yeah. So, without having seen it, I can say probably objectively better than. But, yeah, no. I could see, you know, Jack Black was having fun. Really loved that.
Early,
it's always fun,
great,
to see Jack Black having fun.
Harley Day and Seth Rogen are great.
Oh, yeah. As well as Anya Taylor-Joy.
He's well used in it. The actor fits it really well.
So, yeah.
So, yeah.
Fun and fine. Saw Indy 5. Okay.
I actually really like it. I think it's one of the most downbeat and depressing action movies that I've seen in a long time, and I love it for that. I feel like there's always been a sense that Indiana Jones is destined to fail because any one of these discoveries would change the world. So he can't. We know he can't do that. Yeah. So this one actually wrestles with the idea of, if you're destined to be a failure, what does that feel like? And there's weight to it. It's genuinely about the idea of this iconic hero has failed in his life. And it's very effective.
So, there you go.
I don't know. I liked it. It's a very James Mangold film, I'll say that.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Like, it's very James Mangold. You put this next to Logan, and it feels of a piece.
I can see that, definitely. But I guess I, like, couldn't help but compare it to, you know, the rest, like, the, at least, you know, the first three. So I get why it didn't hit for me on that level, but I can see that, definitely. But, yeah. A tiny one, Please Don't Destroy, The Legend of, I forgot the full title. Yeah, it's a treasure hunting film, and it's a Saturday Night Live kind of thing, like adjacent, because now their digital shorts have this little group of three, like, comedians there that call themselves Please Don't Destroy. So it's them, and it has Conan O'Brien in it in a semi-prominent role. And just a lot of people. It's on Peacock, I think.
Yes, Peacock.
Yeah.
I do have a question for you, since you actually saw the movie.
Yeah.
What does Soulja Boy have to do with the movie? Because Crank That was used in the promo material, and I was wondering what the hell was going on.
I don't remember him in it. So if that tells you anything, like, I'm not sure if he was actually in it at all in, like, a cameo or whatever. Like, I don't think he had much to do with it. Maybe they featured that song, but I don't remember that. So if that tells you anything.
Okay, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. That might be something that hits me later. But yeah, the only thing I prominently remember is the three boys and Conan O'Brien. And it's one of those where it's really funny because it's a treasure hunting film. And, like, halfway through, no spoilers, halfway through the film, they get the treasure. So it's like, oh, well, that's unexpected. And that's kind of how it plays out. Like, a lot of plot things are like, oh, that's unexpected, because, you know, that happened, and it just sort of makes its plot from there. So that was a nice little refresher, a nice little refreshing thing to see plot beats kind of, like, subtly twist. Like, it's, I wouldn't call them plot twists necessarily, but it twists on you in ways you don't expect. You don't know where it's going next. So that's fun. And they even kind of earn the title Please Don't Destroy, because like the first, like the most prominent thing, especially if you're not familiar with the Saturday Night Live like little short skits, is why do they call it this? Why is it called this? And there's a reason for it. But anyway, I recommend giving that a nice watch. It may be for you, it may not be, but yeah, there it is. Please Don't Destroy, The Treasure of Foggy Mountain. Thank you. Zephyr put it in the chat. But yeah, so it's a nice, fun little film. I recommend giving it a watch. I have Quantumania. It's okay. R.I.P. Jonathan Majors' career. Let me see. I just have a couple more. Saw Guardians 3.
It's great.
Yeah. It's a nice little ender. Like, it kind of brings it down from the high comedy of the, you know, last two, because it necessitated it. But yeah, I thought it was a nice little ender. I like how everything wrapped up. But anyway, that's all I'll say about that. I think the last one I want to end on is The Boy and the Heron.
Ooh, Miyazaki.
Miyazaki, yeah. And on a good little high note, because it is Miyazaki's fourth final film, if I'm counting correctly. And probably, most likely, not his last. So, yeah, this is like his first film in about 10 years. And I saw it like kind of in a preview screening, an IMAX preview screening. Got the poster and everything. And unexpectedly, I got to see it in Japanese. So,
oh, very cool.
Yeah. So need to go back and rewatch just because I hear like the English dub, because I hear that Robert Pattinson gives a stellar performance as the Heron, just kind of does like a nice little spine tingler for the whole movie. But anyway, it was great, as are all his films. It deals with a lot of themes of grief and very heavy, like it's in ways that it's kind of hard to discuss it without like context or spoiler. But yeah, I just sitting in the theater, you know, watching his movie on a big IMAX screen, you know, I was just the whole time really, really happy that this got to happen again, you know, because I saw The Wind Rises in theaters and went, oh man, I can't believe, you know, this might be his last one. And so I was just really happy I got to see that. It was with a great crowd. And there's very few movies I've actually seen of his, like, in the original Japanese, and let alone on a big screen. So, yeah. Boy and the Heron, I recommend it.
All right. I guess that means that I get to take over now.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to mostly be covering, I'm going to start off by covering films that I didn't like, because there's a few movies that I kind of want to call down on. Bizarrely enough, I'm going to be covering two movies that won Best Original Screenplay at the Oscars. I might as well get the big one that I'm very far on the outside on, but I'm sorry, I hated Everything Everywhere All at Once. I hated it. I think it is one of the most juvenile movies that I've ever seen. I love that Yo won an Oscar, because she deserved it. I love that Kwan got the resurgence they got. It was announced this week he's going to be doing an action movie where he's going to be the star, which, for those that don't know, he's super trained in. He's a very well-trained martial artist, actually. He did, when he was in his period where he was in the woods, so to speak, he was doing fight choreography for movies like X-Men. So I love that it did that for Kwan. I could not stand the movie, but at least I could say there were good things about it. I can't say that about Promising Young Woman, which is what would happen if the Daily Wire decided to make a movie about Me Too. My God, that movie hates women and people, and just it's just pathetic. I really hated this movie so much. Emerald Fennell, I've heard Saltburn is terrible. He is not someone I'm going to be watching. But, you know, but those are two movies that I hated. I'm going to cover a movie that I disliked. I'm sorry, I found Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves annoying, is how I would describe it. It was a movie that kept constantly trying to do really serious plot points, and then it would undercut them with a, well, that just happened joke. Couldn't stand it. It really got on my nerves. I'm sorry, that one was just not for me.
Sorry, just real quick note. Yeah, this is another one of those things that's like pure fan service because it's like kind of specifically for people who play D&D. So, I can get how that would be an annoyance too. But I also loved it.
And you see, the thing is, I watched it with someone who loved D&D and they were annoyed by it too.
Okay.
I don't know. Now, to move on to a movie that I disliked. I will say that you mentioned horror and that I shouldn't see Skinamarink. Let me talk about a horror movie I did see. I did see Evil Dead Rise. And
yes.
I gotta say, it is as deserving of the Evil Dead title as anybody can get. My yes. God, this movie feels like an Evil Dead movie. It's funny because it
super does.
It has the deadites are perfect in it. The kills, it's so gory. But more than anything else, it understands that this is a black comedy. Mm-hmm. This isn't something to take seriously. It's so goofy that at the end, you practically expect the cast to come out and do a bow.
Yeah.
It doesn't take itself seriously in the least. The gore is great in it. There's a scene involving glass eating that will scar you.
Oh. Yes.
It's.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really well acted. It has fun with the premise. And for those that have astute ears, listen closely to the priest who's reading the stuff on the records. You know his voice. You know that guy. And you're happy to hear him in an Evil Dead movie. I'll put it that way.
Oh, you actually hear his voice? Because I hear, his contribution was Foley work.
No, you hear his voice. There's the priest in the movie that you hear. That's him.
Uh-huh. Oh, cool.
That's him.
Okay.
That is him. And you, if you know it, you recognize his voice. And the director has even said, through time travel, it is supposed to be who you think it is.
Nice.
So that's how they get that character in the movie. Which is funny. I'm sitting here talking about this as if anyone who knows anything about Evil Dead doesn't know exactly who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But Evil Dead Rise, I really loved. Evil Dead Rise was a 9 out of 10 for me. I just had an absolutely fantastic time with it. It's just so much fun. Also, if we're going to be doing horror... Now, that was a horror movie that I was a little unsure of because I've not been doing well with gory horror. Let's talk about a horror-adjacent movie that I knew I was going to love, and I did. I thought A Haunting in Venice was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. That was fun.
And for those that don't know, I am a massive Hercule Poirot geek. I have a ton of the book. I have listened to a ton of the audio dramas. I love the character so much. Watching this in a movie theater was as much fan service for me as Super Mario Brothers was. It is that much fan service. Kenneth Branagh is great in it. He, of course, directed as well, and it's tremendous. I had a blast with it. It looked gorgeous.
It's 3 for 3 for him.
Yeah, it is. It is. So I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed that one. I really enjoyed Elemental. I thought Elemental was a ton of fun. I really thought it was a really good romantic comedy when I was looking forward to that. But I'm going to close out my... Oh, I will say this. I thought Cocaine Bear was fine. It's not anything I've thought about since, but it is fun, and it does the job. So if you know what it is, I recommend it. I recommend it for Alden Ehrenreich more than anything else. Him and O'Shea Jackson Jr. are great in it. I keep wanting to call O'Shea Jackson Jr. Ice Cube Jr., even though that's not the name he uses. That is what he is, of course. But, man, I will say this. O'Shea Jackson Jr. got his dad's comic gift. And that's the nicest thing I could say for him. Now, I'm sitting here. I will say I'm holding Opal right now as I'm talking about all this. This is so much fun for me. I love having a baby. She's just a good baby.
No.
But I will say the two movie experiences, though, that I had the most fun with this year were actually the two that I saw last this year. I did see Taylor Swift, The Eras Tour. And all I can say is, watching it, I don't feel like I missed out on anything not seeing the concert live in person, because the concert movie is basically like you get the best seat in the house for the entire concert. It's gorgeously shot. It's well made. It's thunderous. It is an experience that you won't soon forget. It's a ton of fun. If you like her music, you're going to enjoy it. If you don't, you shouldn't watch it. It's that simple.
Yeah. I will say that my city is getting its fill of Taylor Swift currently.
Oh my god, I cannot imagine. I cannot imagine.
Every single Chiefs game, it shows her in the box.
I am so sorry.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's amusing to me.
It is.
Not being a Chiefs fan, not being a Taylor Swift fan, not by like any sort of dislike, but just neutral. It's funny for me. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
But I want to close this out kind of on the same note that you were watching a Japanese movie in Japanese.
Yeah.
Because I saw Godzilla Minus One. Now, we've already established over the course of this cast that I'm a huge Godzilla geek. I would put Godzilla Minus One second only to the 1954 movie in terms of quality.
Nice.
This is a good movie. This is the movie that really makes you hate the argument of the humans don't matter, because the humans matter throughout this movie. The humans are everything in it. It tells a profoundly human story. It also, in parts, it's Jaws. It makes Godzilla terrifying again for the first time in years.
Yeah.
This is a Godzilla that you're afraid of, and he looks menacing, and he's... There's no heroic Godzilla here. This is a true monster movie. It looks gorgeous. I saw it on an XD screen in Little Rock, and it looked amazing on the big screen. It sounded great. The special effects are a rival American stuff. But man, this is as good as Godzilla gets. And I even sought out the novelization, which does not have an American translation. And someone did a fan translation of it. And so I got to read it that way. And that was a lot of fun. But like I said, if you weren't me to talk about the thing that came this year that I love the most, it's got to be my baby Opal. I'm holding her right now. She's looking up at me with those big blue eyes. And she's so great. Uh-huh. And that's the note that I want to end this cast on. It's good to talk to y'all again. We are going to definitely do more of these. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was in the process of buying a house and, working on it. It's new office. You know, you had Bebe, and like we all had lots of things going.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of spinning plates. So, yeah, we'll be doing this a little more often now.
All right.
But, yeah, you know where to find us, omniplex.org, Facebook, etc. omniplexpodcast@gmail.com.
Well, actually, it's been a while.
Yeah?
We changed platforms.
Yeah, we're not on, Twitter. the single letter platform anymore. Twitter, yes. It'll forever be Twitter. We're not there anymore. We do not have a presence. So...
We are on a Blue Sky, right?
Yes, we do have a Blue Sky. That's right. So our Blue Sky is theomniplex.bsky.social. So, yeah, find us there.
All right.
Yep.
So, anyway.
We'll talk to y'all next year.
May 2024 be full of good things.
Please.
Please. Begging you, please. So much to say, I forget to start. There goes a day, as it passes, forget to start.